Welcome into a brand new episode of the West Ham Way USA podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Brawley, in St. Louis, Missouri. On the other side, we have Tony in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. How's it going, Tony?
Man, we haven't done a pod in 2 weeks, but it's been 8 games. So I'm glad to be back. This is exciting, coming to you after a big win tonight against Aston Villa. It's great to see your face, man. I feel like strangers.
Yeah, it's been way too long. We have definitely had a bunch of bumps and just life getting in the way of recording these shows on a regular basis, but I'm glad that we found some time to do this after, how long has it been? 4 weeks? 5 weeks?
Dude, it's literally only been December 29th, so the entire month of January. I hope we're not the bad luck because we've went on fantastic form there. What did you say? We won 7 of 8?
Yeah, 7 of
our... In that stretch?
Yeah, since we've recorded, we have won 7 of our last 8 games in all competitions.
Oh, God. So I really hope we're not the jinx and we do the business against Fulham this weekend.
Well, we would have definitely been a jinx had we recorded after Palace and before Liverpool, and then we went and lost against Liverpool to end the streak of games. But we didn't. We waited until after the Liverpool game and after the Villa game, where we just won. So we are recording today is February 3rd. And West Ham have just beaten Aston Villa 3-1. So just to give you a little timeline as to where we're at, we are recording right after the game to give you guys some instant match reaction. So and we actually can do it for once. I'm glad we have the time booked out of our schedules to do it.
Yeah, no, today's a special day for you and your lady.
Yeah, it is. Well, supposed to be,
supposed
anyway.
To be.
Today, Sammy, it was her due date, my wife, Sammy. Our son Hayes should be coming into the world literally any day now. She can't wait to get him out of her womb because he is making her very uncomfortable right now. So we are anxiously awaiting the arrival of the newest hammer, and we're really, really excited to meet him. But yeah,
we might be doing the podcast from the hospital if you get a call in the middle of the podcast.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? But we will see. Sammy's upstairs, so if she gives me the call or the scream, then I'm going to have to hang up and get out of here.
Yeah, that works for me. And then the other reason I've been busy, I'm actually moving back to Philadelphia, folks. So, I bought a house in South Philly. Pretty excited about that because COVID giving me an opportunity to move cities back to the big city. If for anyone who's familiar with the East Coast, I live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is a small big town, but I'm excited to go back to Philly. I lived in Philly for 5 years. I went to Temple University, so I miss it so much. Better restaurants, better people. It's going to be a big change into adultship and home ownership. So I know you're already there. And you got a baby on the way, so maybe I'll be following you in the next few years on that front.
Yeah, and I just got a brand new car too, so
I've been
making some big purchases. And it's not brand new, actually; it's slightly used, but it's a really nice welcome addition to the family and needed for a new baby coming into the world.
So, long story short, folks, your two favorite co-hosts are busy peeps, but we're excited to do this podcast for you. You know, our recommendation, if you're looking for regular West Ham, amazing West Ham content, go ahead and subscribe to the West Ham Way UK Patreon with Dave and X. I got fantastic news there. Also want to give them a plug since they're our partner / daddy pod. So go ahead and give them a subscribe with that amazing content. Other than that, any other pre-podcast news you want to chat about or give them a shout or attest to that content?
No, I mean, yeah, Dave and X are the forefront, or at the very forefront of the West Ham content podcast world, at least, as far as content goes. And I will say for only, I think, $6 or $7 a month, you get really good amount of content. I mean, they work really hard at it, is what I'm trying to say. They put out 2 podcasts a week, sometimes 3. And you're getting the exclusive news emailed to you the second it drops, which is really good. I know X and Dave have been trying to stop the whole leaking of news, which I've told them is pretty much impossible. You can ask and ask and ask, but it seems like these shitty people just want to leak the news and put it out there and ruin it for all the paying people. But if you haven't already subscribed to them, I highly recommend it because it is well worth the money, I will say.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess where do you even want to start? Do we want to start with the instant reactions from tonight and then maybe go back and talk about how the season progressed? Because, you know, we have a rare opportunity to do this right after the game.
One thing I want to talk about before we go into the game is the transfer window closed 2-3 days ago now. And West Ham did bring in Jesse Lingard on loan, which we'll talk about him a lot here pretty soon. But we did end the window without signing a striker. And this is where I wanted to kind of lead off with is, was it a mistake to not buy a striker in your eyes? And if so, explain, or if not, explain. But basically, what do you think about not getting a striker in any form?
I think it's a big mistake. I'm very concerned. One injury to Antonio and our top striker is Yarmolenko, or one of our youth strikers just went on loan to Bolton. So we are stretched so thin there. I don't know if Jesse can play there worse, but that's not what I'm looking for. Once we get into how he played today, you know, I don't want to see him out of that position the way he linked up well. But getting into that later, more so about the striker, yeah, I'm concerned. One hamstring injury to Antonio, we're done. But I want to do one, what would be the right word, devil's advocate that I read, and that's got a lot in the flack because people are saying they're drinking the GSB Kool-Aid. I do like that we didn't spend money on somebody that we didn't want, supposedly, if that's the truth. Do I know it's the truth? I have no idea. But I will say I don't like reckless spending, and I feel like we do that all the time. It's always about smart investment, which we don't do.
I totally agree with what you're saying. Here's my thing with it, though. So Moyes has come out and said, and who knows, this is where it gets murky for me as to what I think, because it for me, it all comes down to whether David Moyes is actually telling the truth or if he is taking the blame for the board, which I don't know why he would. But if it's true that Gold, Sullivan, and Brady made it clear to him that he has money to spend on transfer deadline day, and he said, no, I don't want to bring anyone in, I'm happy with the players I have, then I've questioned David Moyes so long that I'm going to trust him to do his thing now at this point. So if that's true and he did not want anyone, then you just got to go with it. Do I think it's the wrong decision personally? Yeah, because obviously Antonio, we know his hamstrings aren't going to hold up for the rest of the season. I guarantee you he will miss at least one or two more games, if probably more, knowing his hamstrings. But if he's willing to, if he's happy with Yarmolenko, the kid, I can't think of what his name is, Mipo something, I don't even know what his name is, if I'm honest, which is worrying. And then again, I think he's content with playing Jesse Lingard as a striker if needed. But you said it earlier, if we're playing him at striker, that takes away from him playing in that central attacking midfield role where he linked up with Benrahma on the left-hand side all game long. So I am really torn as to how I feel, because I want to trust David Moyes, and if he is telling the truth and not taking the fall for the board, then I'm behind him 100%. But if the board were being cheap and didn't want to buy anyone, that's where I have the issue. And will we really know the truth? Probably not. But that's where I'm at on it. But anyway, we can get into the game now if you want to.
Yeah, let's go into it. I'll let you start. What were your thoughts of the lineup? Quite bizarre. Came out of nowhere. Was surprised to see Fredericks in the midfield. Just a Lingard. I was surprised that he was starting right away, to be honest with you. A lot of surprises. What were your thoughts?
I was really, really confused when I saw Ryan Fredericks, as you just said. I was very, very confused. Mainly because I couldn't tell if it was going to be a back four or a back five. And then on Patreon, I will say, because me having a Patreon, I got the news that X said Fredericks is in the team, so they can double team Grealish if needed, and there's extra cover there. So he's going to play a midfield role, but he's also going to track back a lot more because he's basically going to be man-marking Grealish if he's on that right-hand side. So I was, once I thought about it that way, I was like, oh, okay, I guess I can see where he's going with it at least.
Yeah, and honestly, it paid off. it worked out extremely well. You saw Fredericks with his pace, and Sofala is actually pretty pacey himself. So those two tracking back, but also going forward, their overlap play, I thought it was great, and the risk worked out. You know, we got to rest Bowen, and rest some guys, and still get the results. So yeah, I was pretty impressed that the lineup worked out. We would be having a whole different conversation if they lost, and we would say, well, the tactician, why did he do all that crazy shit? It's a complete different conversation. So the risk reward, and it worked out. So good on Moyes.
Yeah, it was. It seemed like it was a stroke of genius from him, and very, very smart to do what he did. I thought Fredericks actually did have a really good game for what he needed mm-hmm. to do. I thought he played really well. I don't want him to start every game from here on out. Like, you don't change a winning team. I would rather him not start probably the next game and bring back in Fornals or Bowen, because I don't think you can drop Lingard. And we can get into Lingard. I thought he, alone with Benrahma, and these guys weren't the only reason we won the game. I shouldn't say alone. But I thought they were absolutely terrific together. They looked like they played together for a year before this is Lingard's first game. I mean, they were playing 1-2s off each other. It looked like Payet and Lanzini back in their prime, I thought, it reminded me of a lot. I was just absolutely buzzing with the way Benrahma linked up with Lingard. And Lingard, I will say, I think his two goals probably both should have been saved, if I'm honest. I thought Martinez had his worst game as a Villa player. I think I made the joke that it reminded me, is he Roberto in disguise? I made the joke. And I think that's probably a little harsh on Martinez because he's been really good this season. But I think that shouldn't take away from the fact that Lingard had an excellent game. He took guys on, which is what the main thing I wanted to see. Let me just say this. The main thing I wanted to see from Jesse Lingard was I wanted to see him want to play for West Ham. I didn't want him to stroll around the park thinking he's doing us a favor by being at West Ham, by being at little old West Ham. And I didn't see that whatsoever. He was fearless. He took guys on. He wanted the ball. If you watch the game, he dropped back to get the ball. He said, I want the ball. Gimme, 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 gimme. Mm-hmm. All game long, he dropped back into that position, saying, let me command this midfield and let me push us forward. And then his ability to play little 1-2s with Benrahma was just spectacular. And then I thought his pace looked good. I thought he tired towards the end of both halves, which is understandable when you haven't played a league game in over a year. So I was absolutely over the moon. I'll let you talk about Lingard now, but that was my little rant about him.
Lingard, this game, was everything I thought Lanzini was going to be with Benrahma. I genuinely thought, and you know, I don't know, I still hope to see it. Maybe I have this blind faith in Lanzini, but I was really hoping that Lanzini and Benrahma would link up like Demi and when Lanzini together, that flair type player. And that didn't happen a few weeks ago when Lanzini kind of resurfaced into the side. What Lingard brought today opened up so much space for Benrahma. And I think that was the difference. I think today was Benrahma's best game. Would you say so?
Oh, totally, 100%. His best start to finish game. Yes, absolutely.
And the difference is he had 10 times more space to work with because Antonio was stretching the back line. Lingard was dribbling well and pulling players, which opened up space for Fredericks to get forward and Benrahma to create space and do his dribbling. So we saw a different Benrahma, and that's what impressed me the most about Lingard is his ability to make everybody else elevate their game today. And that was exciting to see.
Yeah, and if people said we haven't had a podcast, obviously, since Lingard was signed. Before he was signed, when we were rumored with him, I wouldn't say I was against the signing. I was, like, more or less perplexed by the signing that, you know, we have five guys ahead of him in the team, in my eyes, that can play that exact same position, that central or winger position. He's not a striker, so I was very confused as to why we were signing him. But like I said earlier, if that's the guy David Moyes wants and we got him for him, then I'm happy with that, and I'm thrilled that we have him. And clearly, Moyes' faith in him paid off today because in his first start with the team, after only being with the guys, what, 4 or 5 days, mm-hmm. he was the best or one of the best players on the pitch by a country mile. So I think it's time for me, and probably other West Ham fans too, to start cutting Moyes some slack and start trusting the process, as you 76ers fans like to to say. I'm starting to trust the Moyes process, and I'm trying not to question what he does. Still, his in-game decisions baffle me. Still, his substitutions like that. If we go back to the Liverpool game, why on earth did we not go for it from the beginning? First off, and then when you're down by three goals or two, whatever it was, I don't remember at that time. Why are you bringing on Mark Noble and Ryan Fredericks into the game? Down three goals. Like, what is that? That was the most disgusting display. And this is the epitomization of being a West Ham fan, is we can be in the highest of highs coming into the Liverpool game. It feels like we come falling back to earth after the Liverpool game. We sign Lingard. Don't sign a striker. Lingard was signed just before the Liverpool game. But we don't sign a striker on deadline day. And then things are starting to feel kind of doom and gloom again from some people. Not me. Right. I mean, I was fairly confident going into this game. But then all of a sudden you get this performance and Jesse Lingard scores two goals and we play one of the best performances that we've seen in quite a while. And this season's been spectacular. You know what I mean? I mean, this performance today was great. And the difference in West Ham's teams in the past, I think after that Liverpool game, a lot of West Ham teams would have crumbled and thrown their heads down, whereas we played probably our worst game of the season since the Newcastle game at the beginning of the year, losing to Liverpool, and then we come back and we bring a 9 out of 10 against Villa, and I think that speaks volumes as to what David Moyes has done here. So, I mean, that's where we're at right now. I didn't mean to go on a long rant again, but that's what I'm thinking. It's been so long since I've gotten to talk, I have a lot to say.
Well, that's what I was about to say. You got a lot to get out. You got 4 weeks of podcast to get out. Two points I want to add off what you were saying, so there's a little bit of a dialogue rather than thought. You know, to what you were saying about Jesse Lingard, if we're on the honest train, I didn't want him. I'll be completely transparent. I was like, this is completely unnecessary. I don't get it. I think we have other needs. But the kind of supporter fan that I am, which I guess I would say that I get accused of drinking the Kool-Aid all the time, I will always get behind the players, or at least at the beginning. So I didn't want him. He signs the paper, does the funny little dance video. I'm all about Jay Ling's. You know what I mean? Get behind the guy. And he proved me wrong. He was essential today. The other thing I want to say about David Moyes, though, and he's proving me wrong. It's hard for me to say that I don't think he's the guy to take us forward, because I don't. Like, I can't picture it. But he consistently, week in, week out, is proving me wrong. So, in reality, what the hell do I know? But the point I really wanted to make here was we need to make sure that we're giving the credit to David Moyes. Not just you and me, but we as a fan base, because he is turning quote unquote shit into gold, as the saying is said, with barely any investment, players that he may or may not want, getting rid of our 40 million pound striker transfer, getting rid of our 40 million pound winger to Porto, you know, getting rid of some of the other junk that we had. He's turning shit into gold. And I think that he deserves a lot of credit there, contrary to what I was saying. Long story short, I don't want us to be thanking the board for getting us to fit, because they have not. David Moyes has gotten us to fit. And then on top of that, we're in a chance to push for Europe. And you might say, well, motherfucker, how about we invest in the side to push forward? We already got this far, right? But instead, we're like, oh, well, you know, wow, we're in fifth with what we got. Let's not do anything and just hold. And I think that was the disappointing thing for me, is we're all the way up into fifth, 22 games into the season, and we didn't say, hey, let's invest now and fill in the gaps while we're already halfway there. Instead, we're going to wait till the summer and start fresh at 0 points and 0 games again. And that's disappointing.
I think that's, like, the other day we woke up to yet another Talk Sport clickbait piece of clip of their radio show, and I get so frustrated because people bite. West Ham fans bite, and they want you to bite. That's what Talk Sport is built on, is biting on terrible takes. And we got another one yet again. Jim White or someone? No, it wasn't Jim White this time. Who was it? I can't remember who it was.
Alan Brazil. I don't know.
No, it wasn't Brazil. I can't picture his face right now. But he was saying, though, we should get off the west. We should get off the board's back. Let it go. Let it go. Blah 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 blah. Just thinking we should be grateful for what we have, and they haven't walked a mile in our shoes, so they don't get it. But what I'm trying to say is we've got to stop biting on all of Talk Sports' clickbait bullshit headlines that they dangle out for us to bite on. They want you when they post that clip and they post the quotes with the tweet with West Ham fans need to get over it. West Ham fans need to back the team. West Ham fans get off the owner's back. They want us to react to it and drive more traction to their Twitter page and their radio station and then their clips that they're posting. So I know it's hard to do, but I think what I wanted to say is just let's stop feeding into the Talk Sport machine that is. And I actually enjoy listening to Talk Sport sometimes, but I can't stand clickbait. And I think clickbait journalism is the most annoying form of journalism. And that annoys the living daylights out of me. But moving past that,
should we talk actually about the game?
Sure, yeah. We started and then finished. Sure, you can get into the game. What do you got?
Yeah, because we were talking about the lineup. Let's get into the actual game now. I think the most exciting thing about this game as well that you said earlier is we did not let up. We lost to Liverpool earlier in the week, and old West Ham teams would have crumbled. We took it to them for 90 minutes. Even when they scored, we came right back at them. And that was very exciting for me to see. How many games did this season, and you could tell me, that we would get up 1-0, and it just takes me back to the Fulham game or maybe the Villa game earlier in the season or some of the other ones, where we would get up early and we just sat. And we just maybe won 1-0 or 1-2-1, and we really didn't play well. But today, I thought it was an all-around great performance for 90 minutes, and that was very exciting to see.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I'm going to read off the stats from the game. So possession was in favor of Villa, 56-44, which I think is about right. It was pretty close to 50-50. Yeah. But here's where we really, 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 I think, opened a lot of people's eyes. We had 20 shots at goal, 20. There are games in the past where we ended with 1-0, lot of them. Not just one or two, a lot of games in the past where we created three or less shots at target. We created 17 chances out of those 20 shots. Two big chances, which obviously we both scored. But that's where I thought we really, really, really built on what we didn't do against Liverpool. It was actually take the game to a team, not just sit off and try to hit them on the counter, but let's get Benrahma, let's get Lingard, let's get Antonio up there playing off each other, and let's get after these people and get after the defense and let's try to create something.
There's a belief that was different today than a lot of other weeks that, yo, we're a good side. We are a good team. And I can feel that in that performance. I can feel the players thinking, yo, we're quality. We can really do something today. The way that they set up against Liverpool, somebody on Match of the Day said it perfectly, that they came out defeated before they even crossed the white line. The way that we set up, the mentality, all of that. The way that they played today, they said, yo, we are a good team and we're going to win this game. And that's what we did. We came out and took it to them. We tested their goalkeeper. Lingard dribbled at players. Benrahma dribbled at players. That run by Suchek and that pass for that first goal was incredible. Well onside. It wasn't even VAR checked or anything. It was such a perfectly timed run. Absolutely fantastic. And that free-flowing, forward, exciting football was just incredible. I was so proud today. I feel like shit. I had a terrible day. I'm not feeling great. But that performance really lifted my spirits to do this podcast today. I'm so proud. I'm speechless.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because I thought in the first half we came out electric. We came out forcing the issue. And then Villa, towards the end of the half, came into it, but I thought we were the better team by country mile. And then,
yeah,
as you said, I watched the game at home today because the last two or three games I actually watched down at the Amsterdam Tavern in St. Louis with some of the West Ham people. But today I stayed home. And literally the only 2 minutes I walked away from the television is when Souček scored that goal. It was right after Antonio had that almost clean through on goal look, and then he hits it with the outside of his boot.
Yeah.
And I was like, Antonio, what the hell are you doing there? Because he had help off to his left in Lingard, I think, and where he could have played him in, and he hits it from the edge of the area. Right. He hits it from the edge of the area with the outside of his right foot. I was just baffled by that. And then Souček, as soon as I go and take a piss, scores a goal. So I was a little annoyed with myself for going to pee then. But I thought that ball that Benrahma played into Souček was incredible. And then, obviously, the finish, Souček just hammering
it.
Yeah, yep. Hammered it across goal to score was spectacular. I don't think we've mentioned this on our podcast. Maybe we have. I don't remember. But I couldn't tell you a better signing in... I almost want to say our history, but that's probably going a little too far. But in recent memory, at least, or since I've been alive, I can't think of a better transfer than Thomas Souček to West Ham. I think he has meant absolute gold to us. And then to build off of that, I couldn't tell you a better holding midfield duo in the Premier League right now than Rice and Souček. Both of those things are outrageous things when you think about the context of what I'm actually saying. They are outrageous. But tell me a better signing than Souček for us, and then tell me a better holding midfield pair than Rice and Souček.
So the only thing I could say, honestly, is Agbana, maybe. I think was a great steal from Juventus. He wasn't too expensive. I wouldn't say better. I'm just putting out our best transfers. And then Antonio stealing him from Forest. But other than that, Thomas Souček has been better as a holding midfielder than any striker that we've signed in my era of watching West Ham.
Yeah, like I'm going back to like Carlos Tevez and Javier Mascherano. Like I'm saying better, like Thomas Souček has meant more to this West Ham team than Carlos Tevez did that year that we stayed up. I mean, that is how highly I think of him. He's better than getting Craig Bellamy, better than getting Dean Ashton. I mean, I'm going back in my memory where I am seriously saying I honestly don't think that there has been a better all around. I'm talking about it from all aspects, like money, value for money, and then what that player has actually meant to the team that he was put into. Like, I think if Souček wasn't in this team, we'd still be fine, probably, but Mark Noble can't do what Souček's done, not even close. I don't think anyone else on the bench can do anything what close to Souček has done.
Souček also adds some sort of physicality that, as much as I love him, Mark Noble doesn't have.
Yeah,
I mean,
from set
Thomas
plays.
Thomas Souček is an engine.
Yeah.
This dude runs up and down. He was, at halftime, had the most kilometers on the feed I was watching. He's an aerial threat. He finishes with his cleats, you know. He's an all around fantastic player, and this is where I get so frustrated with our board and our recruitment. Is Thomas Souček costs what, 17 million?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I don't remember.
Let's just say it's 20. I can't imagine it was more than that. Whatever they finalized that for, you know, that was an amazing transfer, a game changing player that they went out and found. Whoever found him. And said, yo, this guy, he's affordable and is going to change everything about your team, the whole dynamic. And that's what they needed. So far, he was only, what, 7 million, 5 million? And he has been an absolute godsend, incredible outside back for us. So I guess I beat the same drum every podcast. We're going to lose listeners because I say the same thing. But it's so important to me that it's not about the money they spend. It's about how ridiculous they spend it. And if they just properly invested in scouting and found the right players, they wouldn't be losing money. Like, these people are terrible businessmen. They're consistently taking losses on all their transfers like fucking idiots.
They waste so much money. If they properly invested in the side and maybe had a better scouting or better potential seeking, I don't know what the right word would be because it's real life. It's not FIFA. But if they found two strikers that are going to bang maybe 10 goals at 10 million rather than paying 40 for Allaire, who scored three and a beautiful bike. And I love Allaire. I thought he was great, but he just didn't work out. But that's what I'm saying is then you can either sell those players on for more money or you just have two solid players. And that's what Suchek is. So I guess what I'm trying to say is our transfer business is horrendous. And I agree with you that Suchek has probably been one of the most influential transfers in recent history.
Yeah, so no doubt about it. It says on Transfer Market that we paid a $5 million, that's U.S. dollar, loan fee for him last year, and then to make it a permanent, we paid $17.82 million. So I guess in total, that'd be probably right around 20 million pounds, maybe slightly less than that, but still, I mean, nonetheless, a bargain. And I think his value, Transfer Market saying his value right now is $33 million. I would go to say in pounds, he's probably close to a 40 to 50 million pound player. Like, if you wanted to lure him away from us, you're almost going to have to pay Declan Rice money because that's how much he means to us. And if he's not forcing a transfer, but I think big clubs are going to start to come sniffing around Thomas Suchek after what he's done for us. I mean, from midfield, he's scoring all these goals. It seems like at least he gets one to two huge chances in every game. And he's playing central midfield. I mean, he's playing...
And he's only 25, by the way.
Box-to-box midfield. Yeah, I mean, we're older than Suchek. That blows my mind. Ugh, like, me, God. That me and you are older than Thomas Suchek. That yeah. It's just wild. But, again, I'm in love with this guy. I just got the... my wife ordered me the home shirt for Christmas that just arrived. And I got Suchek on the back of it. That tells you how much I love him. I mean, I don't get a lot of players on my shirts, but this year I have a Benrahma third kit and a Suchek home kit. But that will end my love fest on Thomas Suchek. But I think the worldwide media should be talking about what Thomas Suchek is doing at West Ham. I'm kind of glad they're not. Maybe he's not getting the attention that would lure him away. But I think he should be talked about a lot more in Premier League programs and things like that, where I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. But that's neither here nor there. To move forward, so after the Suchek goal, I believe it was like, what, the 56th minute? It was 5 minutes later. Lingard makes it 2-0. And again, I thought the keeper probably should have saved it. But nonetheless, Lingard not afraid to put the shot on goal. I mean, he hit two or three from outside the area, and then when he got it in the area, his first instinct was shoot, and if there wasn't room to shoot, he made a pass.
You got your St. Louis Blues hoodie on. We say this for our hockey fans reference a lot. Just put pucks on net.
Yeah.
You know, put the ball on net. Some crazy shit might happen. And that happens in hockey all the time. You got deflections, screens, all that. In soccer, it's the same. Just put the ball on net, and you see that in the third goal more than the second. But second, I'd argue, should still be saved. But anyway, things can happen. A misread, a funny bounce, a weird swerve. So I think that was the difference today. Do you still have the stats up?
Yeah.
Because not only just shots in general, but shots on goal. It's got to be at least 7 or 8.
We had 10 on target.
10. It's 10 on target. So that means that we forced their goalkeeper to make 10, and he made 7 saves.
They only had 2 on target.
Right. So think about how much we had to make their goalkeeper concentrate all game.
Yeah.
That's the difference. And that lack of concentration got us that third goal. You know, they get themselves back in the game. They're all excited. Ollie Watkins comes down there. I think that was a fantastic finish. Fabianski got caught in no man's land. He could have either came out sooner or stayed back, and because I think it was Ogbonna or Craig had it somewhat covered. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is what it is. Lingard comes back down the field, and not even 5 minutes later, it couldn't have been. It literally felt like it was moments later. He just comes back down, puts it on frame into the bottom corner, and the goalkeeper saves it, but just trickles in the net. So that's just how it happens sometimes, and luck was on our side. And here we are now sitting on, what, 38 points? And in fifth place?
Yeah, we are now on 38 points. Again, we gained our 3 points back on Liverpool that they took from us last week. They lost away to Brighton, which that is an absolute kick in the balls to all those teams down there near the relegation zone. Like, it just seems like they can't get results to go their way right now. It's pretty funny. But for us, again, that pulls us within 2 points of Liverpool and a Champions League place after 22 games. That's
and on top of that, I want to add to your point, and I'm not saying it's a guarantee because, you know, it's West Ham, but we play Fulham on the weekend and they have City. So there is an opportunity for us to keep pushing forward. You know, we didn't play well against Fulham last time and got 3 points because Lookman's terrible penalty. Yeah. But we are the better team and on form, and we have the quality to beat Fulham. And if we do, and City do us a favor, we jump Liverpool. And that's incredible to me and shows the grit, the strength, the desire, the passion that this team has, different than other West Ham teams. Because, again, they would have crumbled. If we would have lost again to Villa today, I could see our season unraveling. But our next games are Fulham and then Sheffield, two relegation sides. So now we're talking about bouncing back against Liverpool and another potential for 6 points. I'm not guaranteeing it. I don't want to jinx it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the opportunity's there for the taking. And I hope this team takes it, obviously.
Yeah, so in between those two games, we do have Man United in the FA Cup. But yeah, you're right. Our next two league games are Fulham, then Sheffield United. Yep. And then we go, we have Tottenham at home, which that's a crapshoot game. I mean, Tottenham games can go either direction, as you can see from earlier in the season when we came from 3 goals back to draw with them. And then we have City, and then it's at home to Leeds. I mean, we've got a chance in our next 4 or 5 league games to pick up at least 3 wins, I would say. And then with the way we're playing right now, who knows? I mean, we could do anything's possible is what I'm trying to say. And then if we can get a cup run in the season, I would be over the moon. I would love to reach a semifinal or a final and push for some real silverware. It would suck, of course, if this year was the one year we did it and fans couldn't go, obviously. But you can't look at it that way. I try not to look at it that way.
It would still be special. It's hard. In my heart if we won silverware. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't affect us as much because – actually, it does, because me and you probably would try to make the trip over.
You and I go, yeah. Yeah,
but
I mean, if I get the vaccine by then and we're allowed to travel, I would go.
Yeah, with
100%.
With me having a newborn kid, I think my throat might get slit, but I would still try to make an effort to maybe make it a family vacation. And oh, by the way, honey, West Ham are playing in the FA Cup final this weekend too. Just happened to work out that way.
We're gonna go see go show off to your what?
Yeah, we're gonna
aunt and uncle, right?
Yeah, and my grandparents. We're gonna go introduce Hayes to. My grandparents and
by the way, West Ham's playing.
Aunt Celine and Uncle Lindsay. Oh yeah, by the way, West Ham are playing at Wembley, which is just down the road from there. Just so happened to work out that way.
They live. I know it's not like that close to Wembley, but
no, I mean,
they live around Loftus Road, right?
I mean, they're closer to Wembley than Loftus Road. I mean, they're, they're 2.5 miles from Brentford. Brentford Stadium, and then they're about 3 miles from Wembley. I mean, literally, when you turn onto their street from the main road onto Jubilee Road, you see Wembley's arch when you're driving down the road. So, I mean, that's how close it is. So, yeah, it's a special place. I miss going. I mean, I was supposed to be there in April. I mean, I'm absolutely devastated that I didn't get to go. I just gut-wrenching that we couldn't be there this year, and I miss it so much. So it's been a tough time for a lot of people. So I mean, me not being able to travel, I shouldn't make it sound like a pity party, which I'm not trying to make it sound like, but it's just I think a lot of people miss normal life right now, and it's good that West Ham are bringing us some joy out of that COVID depression.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, not to put myself on a pedestal, because I would never, whether you make the trip or not, you're just as equal as a West Ham fan. I'm just very fortunate and lucky that I go every, 3 to 4 months. I try to make about 3 trips a season. So this season and the end of last season was tough for me. My last trip was January last year, when I got to go to Gillingham in the FA Cup and a few other FA Cup games around the leagues, like in the 92 there. It's tough. This is the longest since my first trip in 2015. This is the longest stretch I've been without going and seeing my friends, seeing our friends, our friend group, seeing my friends in Oxford. I miss them dearly as well. Voice crack. So, it's tough, but you know, at the same time, our team is playing well and that helps. And hopefully trying to bring a positive side to this, you know, our country moves forward and England move forward and this world hopefully can get better, you know. Now I'm rambling about COVID. Let's move into some questions because I don't really have anything else on the game.
One thing I wanted to talk about before we took it over to the next section is I have one question for you. And okay. I think I can't remember if Dave and X talked about this on their show or not. I don't remember off the top of my head. But genuine question, do you think West Ham playing in front of no fans has benefited us more than any other Premier League team?
No. I don't believe that, to be honest with you. I think any team, the fans will get on your back when you're not performing. I think any team, the fans will get behind you when you are performing. I would like to hear this from the players in a more truthful setting. I remember, and I'm going to go off on mini tangent, folks, so I apologize, but I remember players talking about in the NBA, and a few of them were saying how they don't even notice the crowd. So a lot of players will say that, oh, the fans were great, the fans were fantastic. I think that's a PR thing. I think, to be completely honest with you, a lot of players don't notice the crowd. I genuinely believe that if you are that into the game and that laser focused on playing, I think a lot of the time you don't notice the crowd.
And jump in real quick here. Bobby Madley, when I interviewed him, said the exact same thing. He said,
"That's what I remembered it from." That's our own fucking podcast.
Yeah, sorry, he said during the game, genuinely, my eyes don't really go above the fourth or fifth row unless a ball's played high in the air. But I tune them out. I don't even realize that they're there most of the time. So that's what a Premier League referee has said.
Right. So that's where I remembered it. And I do remember an NBA interview like that. But, I mean, I'm sure you do get some interaction. I mean, think about the old bowling ground where at Upton Park and there was – and they're taking a corner – right in front of the Bobby Moore lower and you're right on top of them. Like, sure. I'm not saying that it completely doesn't affect. But I genuinely don't think that it makes too much of a difference. So I hate to be controversial. I like to think that we have a big ruckus crowd and, you know, I think the atmosphere helps, but I don't think it makes as big of a difference than people might think. Do you think, what are your thoughts?
So
you're saying I'm wrong, right? Where are you at?
I disagree with you. I think that we have benefited more than any other team in the league from not having fans. And at the opposite end of the spectrum, I would say Sheffield United have had the worst experience with not having fans in their stadium. I think it shows the two ends. I think you're right about fans having an overstated effect on a game. That being said, all 5 away teams won today, and I don't think that would happen if fans were in the stadium. So I'm teetering back and forth between do fans have a huge impact on the game and do they not. So I don't want to make it sound like I'm bashing West Ham fans, because I think we are the best fans in the world. I think we have some of the best fans in the world. That being said, when shit is not going right at West Ham, which, let's be honest, most of the time it is not going well for West Ham, we can get on their backs more than the average team, I think. And again, I don't watch other teams, so maybe it is the same everywhere. I don't know. But I know for a fact when we are not playing well, we can, like, for an example, if we're starting an attack and then we go sideways and then all the way back to the goalkeeper.
It's a big groan.
Oh, there's every time. I mean, we groan, I feel like, more than a lot of teams do. And I think the players feel that negative energy when even when it's directed at the owners and not them. I still think they hear that and they feel that and it reflects it in the game. And I think if COVID had to happen, West Ham were the team that benefited the most from it. And I think, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think now we're going to get fans back in the stadium, whenever that is. And I think we can build off of what we experienced during COVID. So, but I do think it had a huge effect on West Ham. Not saying that we wouldn't be like still top 10. I just don't think we'd be fifth. I really don't.
I have two counterpoints. So the first one I want to say is I love being a part of the atmosphere, by the way. So like me saying that I don't think it affects the players that much does not equate that I don't think it's there. Like, I love standing in the away end and singing and chanting and jumping and limbs and all that when we score. We are West Ham's. I mean, again, Everton away, we sang We Are West Ham's Claret and Blue Army for like 20 minutes straight. So I love that shit, you know. So I don't want to my opinion to get confused that I think it's important. I think it's special. I think it's passionate. I think it's there. I just don't think it has that much effect. The other counterpoint I want to say to you is I feel like a lot of the atmosphere in the stadium also has to do with what we're seeing on the pitch. So with the atmosphere at the stadium and us getting on the players' back, because myself included, let's call it is what it is, would that be going away if we had this run of form? So it's almost like the chicken and the egg, right? You're saying that the fans, we sometimes the negative energy may affect the players. I'm arguing we affect the players because that's what we're getting out. Like, that's the performance we're getting. So conversely, think about the Chelsea win, like one of the first seasons in the cup when we won 2-1 or something like that. And that was like, that stadium was rocking. That was like one of the first night games, and it was just, the atmosphere was incredible because we had a fantastic performance on the pitch.
Yeah.
So I guess my argument is maybe if we got this performance with fans in the stands, it would be a whole different atmosphere inside the ground.
For sure. I agree with that. I think if in fact we didn't affect and everything plays out exactly the same way, I think the atmosphere is terrific. I agree with that. What I'm saying is, I think those first few games, especially that Newcastle game, like that would have gotten real ugly real fast after that Newcastle game. I think, and again, that sets the tone where maybe the players are slightly, I don't want to say scared to play in front of their own fans, but I think they feel that. So I don't know. We can move on from this, but.
No, I think it was a great question and a good conversation, because it is different. You know, you and I will argue this one, and I'm probably gonna get slated for this, but I don't care. It's my opinion. I like the fake crowd noise.
Oh,
yeah, I do. I wouldn't. I mean, if the argument is would I rather have people there or no people there, I'd rather have people there making the noise. But I don't like the. I think it's dull sometimes without it. Like, if there's not an exciting stretch and it's just silence and the commentators aren't saying anything, sometimes it gets pretty boring. I think the crowd noise adds like a just like a white noise to the game. But yeah, I mean, back to the main conversation, though, is what we're watching now is a completely different product 2 years ago. Between fans in the stands, the quality of the side. I mean, there's so many different factors.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is I don't think the product gets as good And I don't know, as I'm hearing myself say it, I don't know if I fully even believe myself. I just think that a lot of pressure has been taken off of our players by not having fans there. I think that's my ultimate goal.
That's a true statement. You're not wrong. I'm just not sure how much effect that has in the position. That's where I'm coming from. I 100% agree it's a true statement.
Yeah, so yeah, let us know what you think by tweeting us at West Ham Way US Pod. Do you agree or disagree with us? Right. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to discuss the few questions we got on Twitter.
All right, so we are back with the question thread. The first one is, why do I always get Eric's name? Because I can't ever pronounce it. I appreciate you, Eric, so much for always giving us a question.
Hegerness.
Hegerness. Okay. Yeah. Anyway. Obviously, Lingard was excellent today. I was nervous as he seemed tired at the end of the first half, but I was glad I was wrong. What was your thoughts on Fredericks at right mid? Extra cover for Sofal to shut down Grealish, perhaps? Question mark. You first.
I think I addressed this earlier, and X confirmed it. Fredericks at right mid works when there is, I don't know, maybe it works outside of this, but I think today it really worked when he wasn't man marking him the whole game, but a lot of the time Fredericks was brought in to just man mark Jack Grealish, and he had Sofal as cover when he got beat or when he had to defend elsewhere. So going forward, do I want to see Fredericks at right mid? I don't think so. And I think that might be a little harsh on him because he did play well today. I liked what he did. But ideally, Fredericks doesn't slot into my lineup past today.
Yeah, I thought he played fantastic. I do not want to see him against Fulham. I don't think he's necessary for the Fulham match. But to attest to the point that Moyes did, like the game plan that he put forward, you heard the commentator say, or at least on the American feed, at the end of the first half, Grealish switched sides with their other winger because he knew that he was getting double marked by Sofal and Fredericks, two outside backs on the same side together. So I think you could attest that that was the game plan, and it did frustrate Grealish.
For sure. For sure. The next one here is from Tony Hatcher, at Tony Hatcher. How do you work Masuaku into this lineup when he's healthy? Five at the back worked great at the beginning of the season, but our attack today looked about at its most dangerous today. Can I go ahead and lead this one off?
Yeah, go on.
I don't think Masuaku fits into this lineup, if I'm honest. I think he's going to make great bench coverage for if Cresswell goes down or if one of the midfielders goes down. We can still play four at the back. Basically play him in the exact same spot that Fredericks was, just on the opposite side, and have him as coverage for anyone. But I know Masuaku can play in the midfield. I know that. I'm confident of that. I think attacking, he can really let the reins go. He doesn't fit into this lineup. I'm sorry. I can't drop anyone from this team right now for him to just walk back into the team.
I was going to say the same thing. However, counterpoint to what you're saying, I don't see him as a left mid. I don't see him as a Cresswell replacement. I see him as an option for David Moyes to switch the formation. So
maybe so.
I see us going back to the five in the back when we need. I see us staying with the four against weaker sides. So I like the versatility that we have now when Masuaku is back. Because against Fulham, against Villa, against Leeds, against West Brom, against Sheffield, I think we need to stick with four in the back and have our offensive players attack against Chelsea, and against Liverpool and against Man United. I would like to see us go for it and still play attacking players, but I also would like to see us go back to our five in the back and use the wing backs so we do have that extra cover. Next question is from Cameron Durbin. Is it possible for people to just accept this is the best West Ham they have seen in so long and just realize that David Moyes is a great thing? Do you want to go first on accepting David Moyes? Because you and I have criticized him often And even in this podcast, I mean, podcast, I still said that I'm not sure he's the guy to take us forward. But he's consistently proved us wrong. And to Cameron's point, he's getting results. So what are your thoughts there?
So Cameron is my buddy from my hometown who I've converted into a West Ham fan back in middle school. So Cameron and I were in the same middle school. It might have even been our freshman year of high school. And he was not a soccer fan at all, and he went with me to see us play the Columbus Crew back in 2008. So I converted him that day to a West Ham fan. We had a really fun trip. He has been texting me frequently, questioning my hatred for David Moyes earlier in the season, and now he's just bugging me more and more about it because he is a David Moyes fan, and I, up until about a few months ago, was not a David Moyes fan. I think he is making a lot of people eat their words, and he's making a lot of people look pretty stupid, myself included. Dave Walker, uh-huh. Dave Walker included. Dave Walker of the West Ham Way, a big outspoken person of David Moyes, and he'd tell you that himself. It's not like I'm calling him out. I'm saying we were on the same side. I am slowly starting to realize he was the right appointment and just might be the man to take us forward if things continue to go the way they are. So that's what I'll say about that. What do you say? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if he's getting results and we're playing like this, then I have to eat my own words. I'm scared that we could go on a bad run of form and dip back into old ways. But, you know, we did that earlier in the season and bounced back, and here we are because we did go on a run. When we beat Leicester Wolves and got those two draws and got another win, and then we beat Fulham and Sheffield and went on that run, you know, we were feeling good. Then we went on a mini rough patch, you know, dropped some results that were questionable, like the Palace and Brighton games. But David Moyes has got this team to believe and bounce back. So, I need to eat my words and say I'm wrong, or at least for now.
I agree.
I will say I am a little nervous of the last stretch in the middle of the toward the end of the season. We finished with a fairly light schedule, in my opinion. Not knock on wood, not to jinx it, but there's this stretch of maybe like five games in the middle of the remainder of the season that is going to be pretty telling. That if we finish strong with maybe 8 or 9 points out of the last four games, we could be in a great spot, but we just have to get through that middle stretch of Wolves, Chelsea, City, etc. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I just know it's pretty treacherous.
The next one here is from West Ham for Life, and that's at West_Ham for Life. And he or she says, should Moyes get a 20 or a 30-year new contract? Obviously a jokey question, but do you think it is time to give Moyes the extension?
Unfortunately, I do. I mean, I would like to see us wait to the end of the season. I really hate to talk negative. I'm really proud, excited of what I saw today. I'm really excited what I've seen so far this season. I have no inclination that this will happen. But there's still plenty of time for us to struggle. And there's still plenty of time to West Ham this season up. So, no, I'm not ready. I would like to see one in the off season after a good season. And if he keeps us strong, I'll be a very, very happy man. So I would like to wait, but arguably he deserves it now. And I would be comfortable with it.
I think he does deserve it now, but I think I agree with you. I think I'd rather wait till the end of the season just to be sure. I have two chains of thought going on in my head when discussing this. Does Moyes somehow attract a different club and get tapped up and we let his contract basically expire? I don't think that's likely, and I don't think that's practical, but is that possible? I guess maybe. I guess maybe someone could see this and think we want this for our club. At the same time, I think he knows that he's going to get a fair offer at the end of the season for an extension from us. And I think he'd want to continue to build what he's started to build here. And he'd rather work on a long-term project that he's already started rather than go and start a new one somewhere else. So I see that side of it, but I think I agree with you. I think I think if we wait till the end of the season, just to be sure, we end the season well, we give him a new 3-year deal probably, and let him build his future here with us at West Ham.
I want to branch off what you said, because I didn't even there's a good perspective I didn't even think about. Ready? I don't know a job for David Moyes that's bigger than West Ham. I don't think he gets a top six job again. The Man United, although he was set up to fail by Fergie, I still firmly believe that. I don't think that he would get a top six side. The next set of groups would be Wolves, Leicester, and Everton when you talk about quote-unquote big clubs. I don't see him getting a job there. Wolves are very other European. Leicester would probably want a bigger manager, and Everton he already managed. So I think right now West Ham is the biggest job. The only other bigger quote-unquote job potentially could be Celtic, because they're in the Champions League typically. Other than this year, they've faltered significantly against Rangers in the Scottish Premier League. So I think that's really the only bigger job. He failed at, what, Villarreal, wherever he went?
Real Sociedad.
Well, whatever, in La Liga. So I doubt he goes to Europe again. So I think West Ham is a really good destination for David Moyes for a long-term project that, if he can continue to get results and pick the right players, who knows? It might even get better. I'm going to try to be positive here. When he keeps getting more and more David Moyes players rather than flashy David Sullivan players.
Who knows? I agree. The next one here is from Not Ryan at Amish Goat Farm. He says, today's lineup withstanding, who's left out of our attack, out of these guys? Benrahma, Fornals, Bowen, and Lingard. So I guess he's saying only three of those four can play every week. Which one are you dropping out of the four?
I think that it all depends on the lineup and who we're playing. So, for example, in a game that we're expected to win, I think you go Lingard, Bowen, and Benrahma. I liked Fornals last season defensively struggled, especially in the middle. However, I think his work rate significantly improved and his toughness significantly improved. And I would argue that Fornals is one of the best players that tracks back defensively out of all four of those, him and Bowen. So if we're playing a team where we need wingers but a little more defensive cover, I think you go Fornals, Lingard, and Bowen. And I think if we were going to attack, I think it's Benrahma, Lingard, and Bowen.
Fair enough. I'm going to say if I'm just based off the question, if I just am exclusively picking the best lineup and I have to drop one of those guys, I'm dropping Fornals, which is extremely harsh on him because he's had a really good season. Absolutely. I just think those right now, from what I saw today, Lingard needs to stay in the lineup for as long as we have him, because we have him only for the rest of the season. So we need to get out of him everything that we can, especially considering that we paid over, I think, 1.5 or 2 million pounds, or maybe it might have even been £4 million for the loan fee. So I would say we need to get everything out of him that we can. And if he plays as good as he has, or if good as he did today in the rest of the season, then he's got to stay. And then, unfortunately, that means Fornals gets dropped. But that's just the way I look at it. I think we're pretty much on the same page on that one.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's really harsh on Fornals, because I hope he listens to the pod, which I'm sure he doesn't. He's been incredible this season. The transformation from last year to this year has been night and day for me watching him. His growth as a Premier League player, like I said, his ability to track back, his toughness, his fatigue management. I think he's completely improved, and he's still very young, and I think he has a bright future. So I'm excited to see what he has moving forward.
Go ahead with the last one. Or you want me to go?
The next one's from our buddy Liam. What are you going to do when we win the league?
We're going to win the league. We're going to win the league. We're all having a party. We're all having a party. Go ahead.
If we did win the league, though, like, how wild would that be? I know it's not going to happen, but, like, wouldn't that be incredible? It's just fun as a pipe dream. It's stupid, but it's just fun to just picture it, you know?
I genuinely don't know what I would do with myself if we won the league. I don't know.
I would talk shit to all my friends. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
Like my two of my best buddies, one you West Ham fan, Clay is a Chelsea fan, and David's a Liverpool fan. So I'm absolutely loving the fact that we're above Chelsea right now and could potentially go ahead to Liverpool this weekend. I got my screenshots ready.
Isn't that mental to think about? Like West Ham United could jump Liverpool 23 games into the season to jump into a Champions League place. I mean, you said at the beginning of the season that you would like you thought we'd finish 9th or 10th, and we thought that was insane. Like, I can't really wrap my brain around. I mean, we are in a real European push. Now, I really don't think we're going to finish in a Champions League spot. Genuinely, I don't. I would be ecstatic if we finish in a Champions League spot. I
think top seven is a requirement at this point. The way that we played all season and the position we're in now, I think top seven, if we don't hit top seven, I will be disappointed with where we're at now. I said 9th or 10th at the beginning of the season. You guys called me crazy. I don't think we finished Champions League like you said. However, if we don't finish in the top seven, I will be severely disappointed.
Yep, so that means to finish in the top seven, we will have to finish above one of Everton, Tottenham, and Chelsea, and Arsenal. So, I mean, that's a tough ask. But I think with the way this season is set up, I think we are in a very real spot to do that. I mean, we are above Spurs and Chelsea right now. I mean, just think about that.
Yeah.
Spurs do have two games in hand on us, and Chelsea have one. But still, it's just mental to think about it.
Yeah. Last but not least is from your wife, the lovely Sammy. When will your wife finally go into labor? I'm not going to answer that because I think this is your question. But I can only assume, hopefully soon, that we can meet Baby Hayes, your NHL defenseman child, and welcome the new hammer into the world.
Yeah, we're hoping, my friend. Thank you. We're really hoping it's like today. We're really hoping, but she's not showing any immediate signs of him making a entrance into the world. So hopefully we don't have to go get induced next week, but we're just hoping he comes naturally in the next day or so. But we will see. Hopefully sooner rather than later.
Got making a delayed run behind the back line there, yeah, Baby for Hayes.
Sure.
So
for sure.
But that's all I got today. Do you have anything else other than that? If you don't, you want to take us out on the stuff I always mess up?
Yeah, you can follow us on Twitter at West Ham Way US Pod. You can follow me on Twitter at Brawly Darbin. You can follow Tony on Twitter at Tony Clark Dupe. If you guys could go, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. That would be greatly appreciated. And other than that, let's hope we beat the brakes off of Fulham at the weekend, and we're coming after you. We're coming back to you with 3 points. Hopefully we can get back to a more regular schedule. I know we say it all the time, so I'm not going to
say it every time.
I'm not going to make any promises, but we will really try to get back to a more regular schedule. I know our fans are have been very patient with us and very understanding, and we thank you for that. I know a lot of people enjoy what we do because I had a random guy at the bar the other day who I didn't know who came up to me and said, are you the guy that does the West Ham Way USA podcast? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, I listen to it. You guys haven't done one in a while. When you do another one? And I was like, oh, man, sorry. We've been really busy. So we appreciate the understanding. And
even if 10 people listen, it's really appreciated. Whether it's 10 or 1,000, it varies all the time. But all I can say is, you know, it's fun for Brawly and I, and all we can do is just thank you all so much. It's exciting to have your feedback, positive and negative. And all I can say is thanks, fans.
Yep. So anyway, we're going to sign off there, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
All right.